Hello, this is David, and I'm at Linux Fest Northwest, and I'm talking to Don McKenna from McKenna Interpreting Surfaces. And so, Don, we're lucky to get a table next to you, so can you tell us about what you're doing at Linux Fest Northwest?
I can. I'd say I'm the lucky one since you shared your power with me this weekend. I really appreciate that. I'm at Linux Fest Northwest this weekend. It's our second year that we've been here, and it's the only way I know how to give back to this community that's given me a lot. And so I provide interpreting services and I gather Volv to attain national certification level. They're going to be requiring a BA degree just to be eligible to sit for the test.
Okay. Of course, when you're ready for the test, what does that entail?
That entails going through an interpreter training program, getting some real life experience with the community, because of course what they teach you in school is a very formal version of the language, not the colloquial everyday use of the language and how the community uses it. So you really have to split your time between the formal college and then immersing yourself in the community and learning how they really use it every day. So you have to get some real life experience, and then you pay a lot of money to RID. Okay. And you have to take first a written test, which is based on ethics, theory, and law regarding the ADA and things like that. And then after that, if you pass the written test, you can pay another fee and take the performance exam. And that's a videotaped exam, which includes an ethical interview and basic interpreting situations. And then that gets submitted to several raters, and then they decide if you pass or fail, and either you get your certification or you don't.
So obviously you've passed your certification.
I have.
And then, so how many interpreters would you say are available in the, say, Puget Sound area of Washington State? Do you have any idea?
Well, I have a better idea of Washington State as a whole. We have, as far as members of our local chapter, which is the Washington State Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf, we have about 225 members. But not all interpreters in our state are members of the local chapter. Some of them may be members of the Oregon RID chapter or the Idaho RID chapter, some of our neighboring states. So I don't have the numbers on that. My best guess, and this is really a guess, would maybe be anywhere between 300 to 400, but about 225 are actual members of our local organization. And I've been a board member. I recently resigned, but I was a board member for 5 years, so I'm pretty knowledgeable about the numbers of at least our membership of the local organization.
So deaf and blind people, of course, I say blind, deaf people are going to need the assistance for an interpreter. So do people have trouble connecting up, getting interpreters? So I guess I'm asking whether your services are easy to connect with on a professional level, of course, or so would it be hard for someone who needs your services to get your services in a metropolitan area?
No, not particularly. There's several avenues that any entity or person could hire a sign language interpreter. In almost every city, there'll be a variety of language agencies that will provide the service, but also the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf has a search engine to look for interpreters in your area. And when you do that, it will say whether they're certified or not, what certification they hold, and if they're available for freelance work or not. So you can access that list that way and try to direct contact an interpreter if you wish. But otherwise, the other avenue would be going through an agency.
Okay. And so when you're here at the Linux Fest, we're talking about, our sessions are about things software related and dealing with computers. Is that any more difficult to do sign language interpretation for than, say, something where you were at another event, say just a regular lecture?
Yes, it's every kind of event is difficult in its own way. Jargon is a major issue. So we definitely have to negotiate signs and how we interpret specific vocabulary to certain fields. And some interpreters are already very knowledgeable in computer tech speak and know some of the signs. We do have some deaf programmers in the Seattle area that work with a lot of interpreters, and they've been kind enough to share the signs that they have come up with the interpreters, and those have kind of spread through the community. Otherwise, we kind of negotiate what kind of sign language to use for certain terms and vocabulary.
Of course, I haven't attended a session where you've been signing, so give us an example of where, if someone needed your services, you were in the session, would you be getting visual feedback from them as to whether they're understanding then as you're doing the interpreting of the session?
Typically we do, yes. And also, our deaf community is really great. If they see an interpreter is struggling with a certain vocabulary word or concept, and they know a specific sign for that vocabulary, for example, they'll give us the sign for that in the moment while we're interpreting. And then we just incorporate it right then into our interpretation and go on with the lecture.
Okay, real good. Sounds really difficult to me to be a sign language interpreter. I know you watch this on TV a bit and see it around. And so I'm curious as to how many years it took you or months to get into the sign language interpreting where you could actually feel comfortable doing interpreting for people.
After graduation, it took me about 3 years before I felt comfortable enough to take the national level certification exam. And it varies with individuals. It depends on how involved you are with the deaf community itself. The more events, the more involved you are with the deaf community, the more fluent your language becomes. And then your interpreting becomes more fluent as a result of that as well. And then, of course, immersing yourself in work definitely makes a difference. Working a lot and working with other experienced interpreters who can guide you and help you, that's a major component of what we do. I have several mentors. I would never be without a mentor. And one of my mentors who's been in the field for over 45 years, she still has mentors. And it's language, right? And language is constantly growing and changing. Just like in the English language, we constantly have new vocabulary added because new technologies come out. And so they have to create new words and new definitions. And this, it's a parallel in the deaf community with sign language. The deaf community is constantly coming up with new signs. So I'm always learning. Always, always. I will forever be learning that language because it's always changing.
Okay. So if a person wanted to explore getting into sign language interpretation, would they use internet resources like, say, YouTube or something to kind of get a feel for what's going on and get started, or where would they go for something like that?
YouTube has a plethora of videos available of all kinds. There's videos of deaf people doing some lectures. There's videos of ASL students doing homework. There's all kinds of videos out there available. A good resource if they really want to become an interpreter, you can go to the RID website and they have a full listing of all the institutions that offer an interpreter training program and the contact information there. And that would be a really great place to start. Plus they have basic information on the field of interpreting, and that's a really good place to look for that.
So if a family member or a neighbor wants to communicate with someone who has a need for sign language interpretation, how would they go about getting more familiar? Would that be the channel to go then, for YouTube, or would you find someone around the city you're at to get some help?
Well, if you're speaking about in more of a conversational, you have a neighbor or something that
right.
you want to chat with, is that what you're
Yes,
asking?
Like talking across the fence or
yeah.
seeing if they need some help with something once in a while, or you want to be able to understand when they do need help.
Right. So the first thing to do would be to ask that person their preferred method of communication, and the way you could ask them that would be to write a note and
okay.
ask them, what's the best way to communicate with you?
Okay.
And they'll be really open about letting you know the best way to communicate with them. Writing on a note for short things or neighborly kind of talk is a great way to go. The other thing you can do is learn the manual alphabet. And there's only 26 letters in our alphabet, right?
Okay.
You can
yeah.
learn the alphabet in a month's time if you learned a letter a day,
right?
Yeah. And then you can fingerspell words with them, and eventually Deaf people will teach you signs. When they see you spelling a word or struggling with something, they'll just show you the sign when you're chatting with them.
Yeah.
And that would be another avenue. And texting works great as well. Or Instant Messenger. That works really well. And email too.
Do you know of any computer-related technical ways that people could communicate with a deaf person? Is there like a text-to-speech applications where you could have, like, we're hooked up to a microphone here where that would be connected up to someone else's computer, and you could talk that way and it would type it out? Have you seen anything like this?
I know there's some things like that available. The speech recognition is not that great right now. For example, on YouTube, they have a new captioning service on the videos where it's a speech recognition type of captioning service. It's not very accurate yet. So I think there's a long way to go before something like that becomes actually viable. But there are some people developing things like that, and I haven't researched it very deeply. I know it's out there, and I know they're not very accurate. I've used the YouTube captioning to try to see how accurate it is, and it hasn't been very accurate so far. So I'm not sure where they're going to go with that.
I'm curious, when you do sign language interpretation, of course, you did a little bit for me yesterday, and you don't spell things out, of course. You have more, signs are more, our broader range where you're doing flowing motions that people understand. So are you doing like syllables in sign language, or how is that connection, say, with what you understand? Someone is saying something, you can hear this and want to communicate it to a deaf person. How do you interpret that? I guess take it in and then actually transmit that message.
Right. We do something called simultaneous interpreting. And I'll give you an example. Most spoken language interpreters, you'll generally see them listen to somebody speaking in a foreign language, and then the speaker will stop and pause, right? And then the interpreter will go ahead and interpret that whole chunk, and that's called consecutive. And then they go back to the speaker, and they go back and forth in that fashion. When you're simultaneous interpreting, you're listening to the message, your brain is translating it, then we put it out in sign language, and while we're doing that, we're listening to the next part of the message at the same time. And it's a lot of brain work.
Okay.
And that's why any assignment over generally an hour, especially if it's dense in content, we work in pairs, and we trade off every 20 minutes or so to give our brains a rest. Now, American Sign Language is a foreign language, and it has a different grammar structure than English has. So we have to listen to the message, understand the content and the meaning, and then we move all the grammar around and put it into ASL grammar and express it in a signed form. And then the reverse happens when the deaf person is signing. We receive it in a different grammar structure than English and translate it in our head, and then it comes out of our mouth in a spoken form.
Oh, this is really interesting. So it's pretty intense, but do you find yourself on a normal conversation being able to sign very, very fluidly then? I mean, it's just like second nature to you, or are you having to actually focus real hard in order to do the signing?
For just normal conversation, that's fairly easygoing. But when we're talking about, say, the sessions here at Linux Fest, where there's really intense computer jargon, and sometimes they're talking about coding language, which isn't English either, right? I mean, that's
correct,
a whole
other
animal. That is definitely more intense.
When you've had people that have used your services, or that you know of that have used your services at, say, the Linux Fest Northwest, then are these people, would you say, hobbyists as computer users? Or are there actually people that are developers that you've worked with, or do you know?
You know, we haven't had a lot of people here at the fest yet, although I imagine if once we get the word out into the community more, I think we would have a variety. I think we could have a mix of users and programmers potentially here, definitely.
Yeah. So when we think about U.S. market for Linux cons, Linux Fest, open source software gatherings, and that, do you know of any others that are using your service?
There are no other fests that are providing free sign language interpreting services. There aren't any fests that I know of that have any interpreters available at all. Lenox Fest Northwest is the only one that I know of so far that is providing that service.
So would you be a good person to contact if another fest or LenoxCon or whatever needs to or wants to have sign language interpreting?
They're welcome to contact me, and I'd be happy to try to advise them in any way I can for their regional area, the best way to maybe source some of the local interpreters who might be willing to provide services.
Okay, and that would be the probably the most economical way to get this service at another Linux Fest or gathering, correct?
If you're looking for volunteers, it's definitely going to be the most economical way to look locally. Sign language interpreters, we spend a lot of money to maintain our certifications and to go to school, and it can be what a business perceives as maybe expensive to hire a sign language interpreter, depending on your perspective. But my attitude towards this community has really given me a lot and helped me in a lot of ways as a user. And I wanted myself to give back to this community in the only way I knew how. I don't know if other areas will have interpreters who feel the same way, but we do try to give a portion of our time to our deaf community, along with working for fees. And if there are some interpreters in the area that are passionate about open source and providing volunteering services, then I would definitely reach out to the local interpreting community.
So let's give your contact information where someone could reach you if they were interested in getting more information.
Okay.
So an email address?
Email is definitely the most effective way to contact me, and my email address is spiderterp, spiderterp, @gmail.com.
Okay, that should be, of course, a unique address.
Yes.
Like we all have.
Yeah.
So I want to go to the other side of the equation. Is you use open source software for your work, is that correct?
I would love to use it for my work.
Okay.
But at this time I cannot. As a business owner, I own two different businesses, and I need to use a business accounting software. I happen to be a QuickBooks user, and I have yet to find any kind of open source business accounting software. So I use open source software for my entertainment and enjoyment use. I have a netbook and I have a laptop, and I run Ubuntu on my netbook, and I have OpenSUSE 11.4 on my laptop. And I use that for internet and hanging out on the web. I use the Office program to write documents and things like that. And then unfortunately, because I'm limited with the QuickBooks use, I had to pick one of the lesser evils to use. So I got really tired of problems with my Windows machines. So I ended up converting to Mac, being a Mac user specifically for my business use. But other than that, I use as much open source software as I can. And in fact, I use LibreOffice on my Mac as well.
Good, yeah. So you would prefer to use the open source software, but the one thing, and you talked about this with me yesterday, is this accounting software is kind of a hole in the fabric of open source then for you, is that correct?
It is, and I've looked at listservs and blogs, and I'm not the only one who's struggling with this issue of having business accounting software available on an open source platform. I email Intuit, who's the maker of QuickBooks, about 3 times a year, asking them for a Linux-capable version. I don't even care if it's free. It doesn't have to be free.
You're talking free as in cost.
Yes.
You're willing to pay.
Yeah, I would be willing to pay Intuit for a full version of QuickBooks that would work on a Linux machine. And I'm not kidding when I say every time I email them, I usually get a response that says, oh, we have the Linux server version.
Okay.
But that doesn't help me, because you have to have a Windows machine to access that version, right?
Yeah.
I can't just use it on my open source laptop.
Yeah.
And if I could do that, I wouldn't have a Mac in my home either.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good, and I think we're putting the call out here to QuickBooks to, you know, get on the stick and get us a port to Linux.
Yes.
And or someone else in the open source community to develop something that's good enough for people to use as business accounting software. I think that's the need. And so that challenge is out there to all the HBR listeners.
Yes. And there's lots of personal finance software that looks really great on the open source platform. But I need business accounting software. I need double entry business accounting software. Somebody please develop it.
Okay. So I'm sure there are capable people with it. Hopefully this will get done. And I noticed you were using the command line. We were working on getting Mumble installed on your system, and I'm really impressed. I mean, you don't need to know the command line to use the Linux distribution usually. And you were in there playing with it and said you were getting to the place where you could be dangerous with that.
Yes. And in fact, it ended up that I was dangerous yesterday because I went to update my computer last night and I ended up downloading Mumble for OpenSUSE 12.1 instead of 11.4. So then my update just went all wackadoo, and luckily it happened this weekend at the fest, and I took my laptop over to the OpenSUSE booth and they're over there fixing it for me right now.
Wow, tech support. It's just across the way there.
I know. So, and that's what I'm talking about how great this community is in helping basic users like myself really use this kind of software effectively. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the exciting things you might have seen here at the fest, some things you're interested in? What's the highlight for you? How's the food, the weather?
Well, the weather's been great. We've had a little bit of rain, but not too bad.
In fact, we're outside right now.
Yeah, it's nice. It's cloudy, but it's warm, so it's great. The food is excellent here. I wish the cost wasn't as much as it is, but the quality of the food is great that's coming out. I think it's the culinary program here that was making all the food. It was really good.
And this is at the Bellingham Technical College.
Yeah, excellent food. I was really impressed. There's a man here, and I don't know his name, but he's got a gaming booth set up with a racing game.
Oh, Pogo Linux.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I sent a picture of that to my husband. He's a little bit jealous that he chose not to come here this weekend with me.
Well,
I think
good.
He would have been in line several times for that game.
Is he a Linux user?
He is, because I make him.
Good.
I do have a desktop PC at home that runs Ubuntu
cool.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and the did you go to the museum last night, the Spark Museum, for the
Yes, I did.
How was the beer? I guess the HBR wants to know how the beer was.
I was a designated driver, so I didn't have any beer, but my friends did, and they said the beer was great. The museum was fantastic, and I don't know if you were here last year for the party.
No, I wasn't.
Last year, the party was in a kind of a conference room at a hotel, so wasn't that exciting. This year's party, I would say, was a huge improvement. We had full reign of that museum, and that was fascinating. And then they did a whole electricity show that night with the Tesla
coil. I didn't stay for that, and you did, and
I did.
That was spectacular.
It was cool. Yeah, they're still developing the show, but at one point they had a metal mesh orb with a chair inside.
Yes, I see that.
Did
I saw
you see
that.
It when you came in?
Yeah.
And then a guy sat in there and they turned on the Tesla coil, which was shooting all over this globe he was sitting in. And then he's touching the globe to prove that he wasn't getting electrocuted by it. And that was really cool. And then, of course, they had the tubes, the lighting, and they could light them up without touching anything. It was a pretty fantastic show.
Yeah. Was the participant in the chair, was he a volunteer, or had he been experienced with that before?
I think he was part of the team and experienced with that, but the man who was doing the whole presentation said that next time, once they get the show finalized, sometime in October, I believe he said, then they're going to ask for volunteers and be able to take a photo of them while they're in
cool.
there, which would be really great.
Yeah, I enjoyed the party for as long as I stayed, and the beer must have been really good, because we had I have the homemade HBR t-shirt on when I was there, and fella from, I'm going to say it's Ferndale up north of here. Mm-hmm. He's retired and his wife isn't, but she has an embroidery machine. And so he offered her services to make us some t-shirts. He said it would be a little upgrade. So I don't know if he was saying that they look kind of bad or not.
Uh-oh.
But she didn't seem all that really hip on the idea, but she was kind of going along with him. But he had a few beers. So I think the beer was really good. And I hope to get an interview later over Mumble with the Linux brewers there. And I'll just say they're going to be starting a brewery in the Seattle-Tacoma area. So, and they were like they're a really cool group, and they look like a rock band, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The differences, and I mean, it's just really good, and I really like that. And so, is there anything else you want to share with the HBR audience, or anything at all about what you do for as an interpreter, or to encourage people to begin that or learning that? Anything at all you want to share?
Well, I guess my final words, I'd like to say, for the communities that put on fests in other regions and other areas, to provide this kind of accessibility to the deaf community is really valuable. For deaf people to feel like they don't have to specifically request a service or burden somebody with a service, and just feel like they can come to a festival like this, like anybody else, can just register online and show up and go to sessions and have complete and full accessibility, is really valuable to that community. And they can participate in your community as well, provided they have the communication means to be able to do that. And they have valuable insights and ideas just like anybody else has, and it would sure make it easier for them to get access to festivals like this if you could arrange to have some kind of interpreting or accessibility services.
Okay. And for Hacker Public Radio, you know, we put out a podcast, and so for a deaf person to be able to participate as a listener, quotes, we would really need to have, like, transcription? Would that be the way to go for us to be able to communicate?
Oh, well, yes, a transcription would work. I imagine this is not in any kind of video format. If it was, then closed captioning would be the way to go. And I say that because there are some places that may have a video or video interview or something with a transcription, and you can't watch a video and read a transcription at the same time, but you can read captions as they're speaking and watch the video at the same time. So for something that's like in this format, a transcription would be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
I seem to recall that Ken Fallon, our community leader, was talking about doing something with putting the HBR episodes into slides. That would be good, huh?
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And one last thing I'd like to ask you is, are you aware of anybody that is deaf that is doing programming?
I know that there
are... coding, I guess.
Yes, there are some that work at Microsoft that I know of, just from community. I don't work there, but I just know them as community members. And there's a few others floating around out there. And yeah, there's some. At least that's for this area. I don't know about nationwide, and I'm sure there's more.
It seems like a job a deaf person could do.
Yes.
And because... guess what? We're all sort of focusing on our screens. If you have visual sight, then you probably could become an awesome coder and that. So.
And not only that, a lot of these guys work from home and email, and I am, and deaf people are just as capable of doing that as anybody else.
Yes. Okay. Well, real good. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me, and I hope to see you again then. Well, perhaps next year when we come up.
Yeah, thank you, David. I enjoyed it.
Thank
you. I appreciate
the
opportunity as well. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HBR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.